know we're doing our live question and answer, but you said you got a presentation about animals versus plants and the way of eating. Do you want to put that presentation up on the screen? We'll have a look at it now. I think that would be really good. And it's all evidence-based, I believe. So what do you want to tell us about the difference between eating an animal-based diet or plant-based diet?
So there's a constant debate, an argument going on within our community in regards to health, well-being, which is more ethical, which is better for you, which is better for the environment, so on and so forth. And this is the age-old debate on animals versus plants. So when we look at the reasons why one would become vegan, there are fundamentally three reasons that I can think of. Environmental impacts, animal welfare, and in order to be healthier. So let's look at the environmental impacts to start with. So the Eat Lancet guidelines recommend that we consume no more than 15 grams of red meat per day to help the environment due to the methane contribution to greenhouse gases. So this is a statement there. It says, while meat is an important source of key nutrients, including protein, iron and vitamin B12, excess meat consumption can harm our health and the planet. So aim to consume no more than 98 grams of red meat, that's pork, beef or lamb, 203 grams of poultry and 196 grams of fish per week. So that's 14 grams of red meat per day. So let's look at what makes up the greenhouse gases. So these consist of methane, carbon dioxide, nitrous oxide, ozone and water vapor. These gases are natural. They absorb the infrared radiation from the sun. They warm up the surface of the planet. Without these, the surface of the planet would be freezing, making it virtually inhabitable. So these are important. However, they are on the rise, which is also a concern. So when we burn fossil fuels, things like coal, oil, gas, we break down long-chain carbon molecules, releasing new carbon dioxide into the environment, increasing the total number in the atmosphere. With CO2 levels in the atmosphere being over 50% higher now than they were before the Industrial Revolution, this is a major problem, and wanting to reduce any additional gases to this makes perfect sense. So let's look at the research. So a study published by the US Environmental Protection Agency in 2016 stratified the number of emissions by source, and this has been echoed every year since. 90% of the emissions were coming from commercial, residential, industrial, transportation and electrical, with only 2% from beef farming. Shockingly, agricultural crops contributed to over double this amount at 4.7%. In other words, crops, vegetables contribute more to the damage of our atmosphere than agricultural livestock does. The gases produced here with the machinery, energy, transportation all over the world comes from unnatural sources, i.e. burning more of these fossil fuels. The gases from ruminant animals are different. It's natural and are all part of something called the carbon cycle. The carbon cycle is a natural process in which methane produced by ruminants goes into the atmosphere and is broken down into carbon dioxide. This carbon dioxide is then used by plants during cellular respiration. Then the ruminants eat these plants, releasing methane back into the atmosphere, and the cycle repeats itself. No new carbon is created during this process. The carbons produced here are essential for the planet's survival, with no net gain to the atmosphere carbon contribution, unlike the industrial practices introduced by crop farming. Another important point here is that methane only makes up 8 to 10% of all greenhouse gases, meaning the 1.9 contribution from the cows can be lowered further as a potential contributor to these greenhouse gases. What's more astonishing, these studies, such as this one published on the Frontiers website, shows that using regenerative farming techniques, i.e. moving animals from one field to another and allowing the vegetation to grow back, results in more carbon sequestered back into the soil than the amount released into the atmosphere, making it carbon negative. Regenerative farming improves the atmosphere. It does not damage it. It improves the atmosphere. If this is true, why does the Eat Lancet report say to eat or to reduce to 14 grams per day? And unfortunately, the answer to this is very sinister. One which has been implemented, thrown in our faces and reinforced time and time again. So we have become brainwashed into believing that we are saving the environment by not eating meat. And it's all to make a profit. The Eat Lancet guidelines were sponsored by companies such as Kellogg's, Pepsi, Nestle, to name a few. Companies who have benefited in the trillions from more sales because of the plant-based revolution.
Plant-based propaganda.
So the fact here is that if one were to truly care about the environment, supporting regenerative farming over agricultural crop farming not only reduces the damage to the atmosphere, but actually improves it. Now, animal welfare. I hate animal cruelty. I am an animal lover. This is why I am carnivore. Many people become vegan for the right reasons. They are animal lovers and they want to protect the planet and save the environment. And guess what? I agree with them. We should all be doing this. They are against caged animals, chickens and cows stuck in small pens for their milk and eggs. I too am against these things. And I believe that the rest of the carnivore community feels the same way. Now, the thing with carnivores and vegans is that we may look complete opposites on the surface, but we are one and the same. We are just wearing different clothes. We both have different approaches, but we both want the same thing. I am an animal lover and I care about our planet and I care about the environment. This is why I am carnivore. Unfortunately, we have been misled, misinformed, tricked into making decisions believing we are doing the right things, all to line the pockets of Big Pharma and the food industry. Big Pharma and the food industry have been working together since the 1950s. One makes you sick, while the other sells you a drug in order to make you better. This is a perfect business model. We see CEOs of Coca-Cola as directors on the board of Pfizer. We need to question everything mainstream media tells us, as more often than not, there is a hidden agenda pushed on us and repeated time and time again until we believe it. As a carnivore, I only eat animals that are not confined to a cage. I am against caged and housed animals. Animals should be free, not confined to a cage. I don't need to fly planes from all over the globe, contributing to the damage to our atmosphere. Many vegans do this for their avocados, their apples and bananas, causing way more damage to the atmosphere than the van that drives my meat 5 miles down the road. Emissions from aviation are a significant contributor to climate change. For example, 224 avocados are the equivalent to taking a plane flight. How many avocados do you eat each year? As we have shown earlier, the whole methane argument is, pardon the pun, bullshit. Now, I hear you saying that even despite the environmental impacts, vegans are not killing animals and carnivores do. But this isn't strictly true. Just because a vegan doesn't eat animals directly or consume animal proteins, this doesn't mean no animals are harmed or lives are lost. So let me explain. In order to grow a field of soy or corn or wheat, first tractor will plow the land, driving its heavy spikes deep into the earth in order to turn it over, pulling all of the vegetation from its roots, as you can see in the image. But notice all of those birds following the tractor. Well, why is this? Now, I must warn graphic content on the next slide, so please be aware. As the machinery carries out this action, lots of animals, mice, rabbits, voles, as well as worms, beetles, and other insects are caught in the machinery and killed, leaving easy pickings for the birds. But many may think that this only happens once, but not at all. Every time these crops are collected, more animals die this way. These crops are also treated with toxic chemicals, pesticides, in order to kill any potential creatures, including animals such as rabbits, who want to eat these crops. These chemicals are toxic chemicals such as glyphosate. Glyphosate is a herbicide that kills the microbes in the ground, desertifying the soil, making that soil a monocrop, not fit for use for anything else other than growing that single crop. The microbes in the ground are killed, so are the worms and the insects, and now so are the birds, as the birds have nothing to feed on, so they die off, and so do the animals that hunt the birds. By growing the crops on that one piece of land, we have now destroyed a whole ecosystem. This study by the Smithsonian National Zoo and Conservation Biology Institute shows that at least 67 million birds die each year in the US alone as a direct result of pesticide use. 67 million. But I buy organic, I hear you say. Can you honestly ensure that it is organic? Many supermarkets who state that they do supply organic have been challenged and been proven wrong. Even if it says organic, the only way you will know if it is truly organic is by growing this yourself. And I encourage you to do this. As a big veggie dip previously, I grew my own, and I encourage you to do the same. And what you will find is that you cannot have life without death. How are you stopping those slugs from eating your lettuce? And why is a slug's life worth anything less than that of a bird or a rabbit or a cow? I know a small handful who grow their own, and I applaud them for doing so. But there's only so much you can grow in the garden before you must venture to the supermarket for your bread or your carrots. So it's clear that even with the best will in the world, even the strictest vegan lifestyle still causes death. But surely, it's way less than when eating just meat. When we look at the studies comparing meat eaters to vegans, anyone who is not a vegan is deemed a meat eater. But I don't agree with that, because many eat in a standard diet and not sourcing their meat ethically. Many consume processed products and from caged animals, hens and cows. And again, I am 100% against this. This we need to stop. But when you look at a true carnivore, a person that only eats meat, or at least predominantly eats meat, we see a very, very different picture. Analyzing various studies and statistics, including the Davis study and the wildlife population density studies, where, for example, 52% of field mice die during field activities, 77% of rats, and why is a rat's life worth anything less than a cow or any other animal for that matter? And also we find over 50% of grey-tailed voles die during alfalfa mowing. That we have evaluated these figures from a number of sources, and we are being incredibly conservative with these figures. Many studies showed way more death than the figures that we are presenting today. Now, the research shows that there are around 274 animals killed per acre in order to bring the produce to the table. 1 acre will feed around 12 people per year.
That's 21 deaths per year.
Now, I admit, now this is incredibly low. However, this does not account for other wildlife, such as the birds, the bees, the insects, that are affected by the use of pesticides. And remember, those 67 million birds each year in the US alone. Now, what about nutrition? Is being a vegan healthier? So, if we take a look at this slide, Steve, we have stratified your two so-called superfoods, blueberries and kale. And then over the right-hand side of the line on there, we have animal proteins, ribeye, beef liver, fish roe, eggs, so on and so forth. Every vitamin and mineral, from vitamin A down to zinc. Now, if we look at this image, Steve, and I'll say this for the purpose of the people listening to the audio podcast, but there is no vitamin A in vegetables. True vitamin A comes in the form of retinol. Now, what's contained in vegetables is a precursor called beta-carotene, which isn't vitamin A at all. This beta-carotene needs to be converted into the active form of retinol, but in order to do so, it needs to be acted upon by an enzyme called BCMO, which depletes this beta-carotene by 21 times, making the amount converted close to zero. Animal proteins, highly abundant in retinol, true vitamin A. B vitamins, vitamin B1, trace amounts. Trace amounts, niacin, next to nothing. What have we got? Vitamin B6, pyridoxine, again, incredibly low volumes of vitamin B6. Biotin, B7. Then we've got folate. Yes, plants contain folate, but guess what? As you can see by the image, so do animal proteins and in abundance. Cobalamin, vitamin B12, does not exist yet. Vitamin B12 is found in abundance in animal proteins. Vitamin C is another big argument from the vegan community. Where do you get your vitamin C if you are not consuming vegetables or fruits? We have been told that vitamin C does not exist in animal proteins, but it does. And 100 grams of ribeye contains 3.5 milligrams of vitamin C. Beef liver, a whopping 25 milligrams per 100. Fish roe, 16, so on and so forth. So vitamin C can be found and is found in animal proteins. Now, the key to this is understanding how vitamin C is absorbed within the body and how it competes for absorption. It competes for absorption with glucose through the GLUT4 transporter. So living a lifestyle in which we are consuming lower carb means our requirement for that vitamin C is also lower, meaning we don't need as much vitamin C as we would if one was consuming high levels of carbohydrate. Now, we know that vitamin C is found in meats. It's been stated all through history. One notable is the Napoleonic War, where they fed dead horse meat to the soldiers who suffered with scurvy in order to prevent it and cure it. And it did indeed. So I haven't eaten plants since I can remember. I don't suffer with any of these issues. You don't, and many others that we work with. In fact, I've never met anyone who is vitamin C deficient. And again, it comes down to this absorption between the competition between the glucose and the vitamin C. Vitamin D does not exist in plants, found in abundance in animal proteins. Vitamin E, yes, is found in plants, but we can also get tumps and tumps of this from animal proteins. Vitamin K2 does not exist in plants. In the supermarket, the kale packets you pick up have a stamp on there or a sticker which say that they are a good source of vitamin K. There is no vitamin K. It's not K2. The human body needs vitamin K2. Plants contain vitamin K1. And again, we need to convert this K1 into K2. And to do so, this process is so inefficient, close to zero is converted. And then we look at other essential compounds, creatine, choline, carnitine, carnosine. These are all compounds that we cannot find from plant studies. And study after study shows that a vegan diet is lacking in these essential vitamins and minerals. We cannot get them from a vegan lifestyle. So flicking on to the next slide, Steve. Vitamin B2, vitamin B3, B12, vitamin D, iodine, zinc, calcium, potassium, and selenium, just to name a few. But can we supplement would be the question. And many vegans find that they need to supplement. And yes, you can supplement. B12 supplements are generally come from bacteria, and they do not contain gelatin within the shell. So we can use vitamin B12 supplements, but why would you want to if you can get it from a natural source? But when it comes to things like iron, because most iron supplements don't come from foods, they are mined from the ground, this is dangerous and it can become toxic. Excess iron is dangerous to the body, particularly to the mitochondria and the myelin sheath. Free iron binds to oxygen and creates free radicals, which can lead to oxidative stress. And that brings me on to the effect of grains and phytic acid and lectins. So when we look at phytic acid and lectins, these compounds can block the absorption of zinc, iron, and magnesium by as much as 100%. Now, zinc is essential for the production of testosterone. Iron is important for supplying oxygen to the muscle with aid in building and repairing. And magnesium is crucial for supporting muscle and energy production. So to block these compounds is going to cause major issues. Now, when it comes to the lectins, when we consume food, the nutrients come into the system, they bind to the microvilli line in the gut, and they prevent the absorption of other nutrients. So as these wheat germ agglutinins bind to the microvilli, they lower the surface area, preventing the body's ability to absorb these nutrients. So it isn't just enough to eat something that is highly nutrient dense. What you co-consume it with has a massive impact on how it's absorbed and if it's absorbed within the body. Now, even more damaging is when these lectins come into the system, they bind to the epithelial cells, they cause the release of a molecule called zonulin. When zonulin is released, it causes a gap in the tight junction between these epithelial cells, allowing undigested protein molecules to travel into the bloodstream where they shouldn't be, and the body creates antibodies to fight them. And then through a process called molecular mimicry, the body begins to attack other proteins in the body that look the same. This is autoimmune disease. All autoimmune issues come from this intestinal permeability, and these grains, these wheat germ agglutinins and phytohemagglutinins found within grains and plants cause much of this intestinal permeability. So moving away from these is obviously highly important, which brings me on to the neurotransmitters. So neurotransmitters are chemical messengers that the body cannot function without. Now, made from amino acids such as tyrosine, tryptophan, and phenylalanine, well, their job is to carry chemical signals and messages from one neuron or nerve cell to the next target cell. The next target cell can be a nerve cell, a muscle cell, or a gland. They are essential for heartbeat, blood pressure, breathing, healing, digestion, and hormone regulation, amongst many other things. But these are essential for life. Now, in order to create these neurotransmitters, we need cofactors. We need other ingredients such as iron, zinc, and vitamin B12. A vegan diet is heavily devoid of these essential nutrients, all of which we can find in abundance in animal proteins, particularly from grass-fed beef and lamb. Now, glyphosate. Coming back to this toxic compound. Now, remember the glyphosate that we mentioned earlier on, the herbicide used to kill the creatures that want to eat our food, our plants. Well, guess what? They also cause harm to us as human beings. Now, glyphosate blocks a pathway called the shikimate pathway, a pathway that affects bacteria and was once thought not to harm human beings. But we too have bacteria. We have bacteria in our gut. 95% of our neurotransmitters are made within the gut from our aromatic amino acids, tryptophan, tyrosine, and phenylalanine. As we showed earlier, we need these to go on to produce our neurotransmitters. But glyphosate blocks the shikimate pathway. It blocks our body's ability to create these aromatic amino acids. And by doing so, our ability to create our neurotransmitters. And remember, our neurotransmitters, we need these. We need these neurotransmitters for many essential processes within the body. That bread, a cereal, no longer look as appetizing as they once did, hey? I'll leave that one up to you. Methylation. Now, methylation, many of you have heard of, or maybe don't understand, but methylation is a first-line essential biochemical process in the transmission of life. We need to perform this for life. So, click on to the next slide. So, methylene tetrahydrofolate reductase, or MTHFR enzyme, and methylfolate B9, B12 and B6 create methylfolate, which breaks down a compound called homocysteine, creating methionine, which goes on to create a compound called SAMe. A defect prevents us from producing this methylfolate. Now, methionine is used to make SAMe, or S-adenosine methionine. Now, SAMe, let's flick that over there. SAMe is responsible for hundreds of reactions within the body. It tackles inflammation, detoxes the body, and makes neurotransmitters. SAMe plays a role in the immune system, maintains cell membranes, and help reduce and break down brain chemicals such as serotonin, melatonin, and dopamine. And it works with vitamin B12 and vitamin B9. So a deficiency in either one of these may reduce levels of SAMe. Now, we need these essential cofactors to perform methylation. We can't methylate without them. So choline, B2, B6, B9, B12, so on and so forth. We need these cofactors to perform methylation and lead to the production of chemicals such as SAMe. Now, as we said earlier, the simple fact of the matter is we've expressed, you know, earlier, a vegan diet is devoid of these essential nutrients. Therefore, a vegan will never be as healthy as they should be. They will never be as fit as they could be. So why do vegans report good health? They become healthier in spite of and not because of. Many vegans are well-educated, who are very active and practice things like yoga. They do not eat processed foods, don't drink alcohol, they don't smoke, have a very good social network. All of these are contributing factors to health and well-being. Many vegans, when making their transition, will see fantastic health benefits. And I too believe a vegan lifestyle is healthier than a standard lifestyle. But the standard lifestyle is not a good benchmark for health and well-being in the first place. The benefits seen are in spite of and not because of. A vegan isn't healthier because they have removed meat from their diet or because they are eating more vegetables for that matter. The benefits seen are to do with healthy user bias, what they are doing and other contributing factors in regards to the things that we have just mentioned. Now, a typical vegan, as I said earlier, is well educated. They don't eat processed foods, they don't drink, they don't smoke, and they practice many of these physical activities, running or hitting the gym, and maybe even meditation, for example. The majority of vegans go back to eating meat. And as this slide shows, in 2014, Faunalytics, the Human Research Council, an organization that conducts research for the support of animal welfare, discovered that 84% of the 11,000 vegans and vegetarians within their study pretty quickly reverted back to their omnivorous ways. One third of the participants lasted less than 3 months, and over half had stated eating meat again within the first year, or started eating meat again within the first year, quoting catastrophic health concerns as a reason. So, you know, that's food for thought, pardon the pun. So what if we eat eggs and dairy? You know, we're not technically killing any animals there. Well, let's take a look at this. So in order for a mammal to lactate or produce milk, they must first become pregnant and give birth. The newly born calf is quickly removed and the mother is milked for many months. If the calf is male, it has no use within the dairy industry, so its life is either terminated immediately or it's reared up to 40 days, at which point it's sold to the beef market. Now, in 2018, an investigation by The Guardian estimated that 95,000 deaths occur every year within the UK alone. Unfortunately, it doesn't end there. Cows within the dairy industry have been selectively bred to produce 7 gallons of milk each day, compared to the single gallon that they are naturally evolved to produce. Their swollen udders grow unnaturally large, inhibiting their ability to walk and rest comfortably, and are prone to excruciating and sometimes fatal infections. The dairy cows that do live on are kept indoors and are fed Hulion grains and prevented from grazing and forced to live in cramped indoor spaces. Now, even though its lifespan could exceed 20 years, most on a dairy farm live only till 5. So as you can see, just because you're not eating meat, consuming milk still causes death. And guess what? I don't drink milk. If you are going to consume milk, find a local farm who produces A2 milk from grass-fed cows who pasture every day using that regenerative farming technique.
Yeah, and of course, with the milk side of things, then vegans will say, well, we don't have dairy milk, actually. We have almond milk. And then you've gone back straight to those problems of lots of flights, and we've got almond production is killing, I think, billions, actually. I think it was about 8 billion bees in a 6-week period in California just to grow the almonds and the avocados, because they bring bees in to pollinate in that area. Also, tons and tons of water is needed to grow almonds, and that's causing a problem under the soil, actually.
So, you know, one of the arguments is that, you know, carnivores kill more animals, but what if we just consumed meat? Now, the amount of beef supplied by the average cow, and this does vary. You know, you did a post recently which stated higher than this, but based on the research I've looked at, I'm going to stick with this because the numbers tie into this. I think the one that you quoted recently, Steve, was like 550 pounds, but I've put in 500. So 500 pounds of meat. So then I began to look at what an average daily consumption for a carnivore would be. Now, the only fair way to do this that I could think of was by looking at the average weight for a man and the average weight for a woman, then dividing this into another average. So let's share that slide there. So in order to do this, I looked into the average height of each, which was 5'9" for a man and 5'4" for a woman. Then I gathered data for the average weight of these, which for a female was 95 to 123 pounds, giving us an average of 109. And for a man was 140 to 171 pounds, giving us an average of 156. Adding these together and dividing them by two gives us a figure of 132 pounds. So how much meat, and I agree, this is, you know, purely hypothetical in regards to the averages. We're all different, but this is the only fair way that I could see to do this. But how much meat would the average person that weighed 132 pounds consume per day? Now, when you and I work with clients, we find that 1 gram per pound of body weight works extremely well. Most of us within this carnivore lifestyle find that that is all that we need. Now, most are satisfied as the protein and fat satisfies and fills us for longer. So that would be 132 grams of protein per day. Now, to obtain this, one would need to consume 530 grams of beef, because not protein isn't 100% protein. So a protein source, 100 grams of protein doesn't equate to 100 grams. 100 grams of beef doesn't equate to 100 grams of protein. It's between 20 and 25%. And I've gone to the lower end of this as well. So 530 grams of beef would allow us to achieve this per day. Now, the protein coupled with the natural fats are more than enough to supply all of the nutrients, vitamins and minerals that the body needs, not just to survive, but thrive. So let's round that 530 grams of beef up to 600. So with an average cow supplying 500 pounds of beef, or 227 kilograms or 22,700 pounds, divide that number that we've just come up with, that 600 per day, would mean that one cow would feed a carnivore for over a year. One cow for over a year. Meaning a true carnivore living the lion diet is saving 20 more lives than a strict vegan. Now, we're comparing a vegan to carnivore. That means a vegan causes over 20 times more death to animals than a carnivore. People such as you and I, Steve. Now, per year. Now, let's go on to the next slide. So, now the question is, do all carnivores eat beef? And no, they don't. So let's add in the lamb factor. A typical lamb would be enough to feed an average person for 38 days. A pig would supply over 100. So it doesn't matter which way you mix this up. A person living a true animal-based lifestyle who supports regenerative farming causes, at worst, 5 times less death than a vegan. 5 times less death. This carnivore would also contribute to zero damage to the environment while supporting local businesses, which is absolutely astonishing. So, yeah, as we just put on that side, at the very worst, a person living an all-animal protein diet would cause 5 animal deaths per year. That's at least four times less than a pure plant-based lifestyle. So the argument from the vegan or vegetarian community, Steve, would be that they're not causing harm directly. And maybe so, maybe not intentional, but you most certainly are indirectly. Now, if you were to drive to the supermarket and accidentally knock over and kill a fox, did you do it on purpose? No. But did you still kill that fox? Yes. Now, if you knew that every other time you were to drive to that supermarket, you would run over and kill a fox, would you still drive to the supermarket? Because now you know that you were going to cause death. Now you know an animal is going to die, making you responsible if you were to do so. So now, given the information that Stephen and I have supplied to you today, you are now aware that crop production not only damages the environment, but causes death to animals. So, as a lover of our planet, and as a lover of animals, are you going to continue to cause more death to animals just by burying your head in the sand and pretending that you're not, turning a blind eye and looking away? Or are you going to take this information seriously and truly make a difference to the environment and the animals which live upon it? You decide. Mic drop.
Thank you so much for listening to my podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. Your support means the absolute world to me. And if you're enjoying the show, I've got a small favour to ask you. I'd be incredibly grateful if you would consider becoming a supporter and make a small monthly donation. Your contribution will really help to improve the show. I'll be able to improve the software, maybe put a few more episodes out, and do many things that I'm hoping to do in the future. Do them a lot quicker. So, it's a small monthly contribution. You can cancel at any time, and the link is in the show notes. Thanks very much for listening.